Are you ready for homeschooling to feel joyful again? Do you long for support as you learn alongside your kids? Welcome to Homeschool Better Together, a podcast about building a homeschool experience that works for your family. I'm Pam Barnhill, and it's time to step out of the overwhelm and into the wonder. Let's do this.
Hello, hello. This is Lainey Homan, and I'm so glad to join you this season as the host for the Homeschool Better Together podcast. In my first episode today, I am really delighted to have our community manager, Dawn Garrett, joining me, and we are going to talk about community-based learning. So welcome, Dawn, and thanks for being here.
Excited to be here for your maiden run on the podcast host. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the opportunity that Pam has given me to be here and to kind of just like experiment and do something new this season. So that's super fun. Well, I really wanted to talk about community-based learning because I am not somebody who has ever really been super involved in like a structured, formal, academic style co-op. And I think that there are lots of options out there for getting our kids together in a learning environment that do not involve being a part of like a really large commercial kind of co-op that dictates your curriculum and other things. I've always been somebody who really wanted a lot of freedom and flexibility to meet my kids where they were with their learning differences and just their particular interests. And so those types of co-ops just never really fit our family. So we found other communities that we could plug into. And it is my understanding, Dawn, that you have also been a part of some communities that have maybe not been what a traditional formal co-op might look like. And so I just kind of wanted to dive into that. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences in having community in your learning and homeschool?
Sure. I laugh that you talk about freedom and flexibility, because in our learning co-op, our fellow like community group activities, I've wanted control. I wanted to be the one who like set the boundaries and set the way things were going to be set up. And I went to some promotions for some of the commercial kinds of things. And I realized that really, I didn't want to do what they told me to do. So that meant I had to find another route, which was great. We started off with not really any community involvement with our homeschooling for the first few years. And I shortly realized that we had not been doing art on the regular basis. So I called up a friend or two who were homeschooling and had kids similar ages and said, "Hey, would you like to make an appointment with me and come to my house? And we'll do art and I'll teach it. I just need you to bring the supplies and let the kids play." So we did that for a year. And then one of my friends wanted to participate and she's like, "We only have one car in our family. Can you come to me and we'll do lunch together?" So we just did art together for a number of years. And that was a great way to like midweek. We saw the same people that we were seeing at church because we were all in the same congregation. And that was just a really wonderful kind of little community. And that expanded and contracted over the years. But that has been our main learning community outside of our direct homeschool. 1 year, maybe 2 years, we had a full day of lessons. We had Spanish 1 year. We always had some art. We did Paper Sloyd, which is a Charlotte Mason thing. We did nature study. We've always done Plutarch. We've always done Shakespeare. So we've done some science. We have a microbiologist in our group. And so she taught the kids how to use a microscope 1 year and did a bunch of labs with them. It's just been kind of like, who can do what? And what is the need? And so we just kind of like get together and do our things.
Okay. So one of the things I heard you say early on was that, like, you realized I wasn't doing art consistently in my homeschool. And that was something I wanted to incorporate more of. And I wanted to be more accountable to it. So one way of doing that was just inviting other families in. 100%, we have done those types of things before, because when we make a commitment to doing something with somebody else, then we're much more likely to stick with it. And so that is great. But what do you think are some other benefits that you have found about kind of utilizing some community-based learning as opposed to only focusing in your own home?
So our group has always been pretty exclusively, you have to be a member or a regular attender of our congregation. And we have, you know, so we've had a lot of homeschoolers in our church for a long time. And so we were seeing the same people on Sunday and Wednesday, and those friendships just kind of were fostered through learning together and worshiping together, and just that their hearts were knit together in a way that I think would not have been if they didn't have those same experiences and that same culture.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I know when my kids have been involved in groups where they were meeting consistently with the same group of kids, you know, weekly or biweekly, that really does to help kind of foster some of those friendships, especially when they're younger and they maybe need a little help for, at least in my homeschool, in our household. Sometimes I have a large family. My kids really knit together very well and they are one another's friends. And so sometimes they need help making outside connections, because we'd go someplace and then they would all just group together. I'm like, you guys can actually, you know, get out, interact with other people. And having families that would come together for learning would give the kids kind of a comfortable environment where they could start to talk and form those relationships themselves. It was also really a valuable piece of, like, me feeling not alone in homeschooling, because I was able to connect with other moms. And there have been seasons in my homeschool where the co-op that we were a part of, where we were, like I said, joining together to do activities with other homeschoolers, was way more for me than it was for the kids, because I needed that connection and, you know, the ability to kind of communicate and talk about, you know, how is my homeschool going? What's working? What's not working? Brainstorm through some of those ideas. So that consistent time to meet with other homeschool moms was also very valuable. So our very first kind of co-op experience was right after we started homeschooling. I found a library near where we lived, and there were a group of homeschoolers that would meet there once a week. And the librarian actually had kind of a program that she would do with them. And the kids had an opportunity to present each week. And so the librarian would do something educational with the kids. It might be something story related, or it might be a game or something like that. She had kind of a program that she would do with them. But then every week, the kids had an opportunity to stand up and share what they had been doing in their own homeschool. So if they had had a project or something they had been working on, they were able to have an audience to share that with. So we had kids of all ages, and it was a great opportunity for, like, teens to stand up and give speeches. And it was a great opportunity for the younger kids to feel included in that. And I remember it was a very impressionable time on me as a young, pretty young mom and a new homeschooler. I had three little boys, and to see some of those teens that had been raised in homeschool families and that came alongside, and just to kind of how they would interact with the younger kids as though it were perfectly normal was really cool to see. Just the all ages connecting. Mm-hmm. And my little boys really had some teens that they really looked up to in that group. And so it was just fun to see those relationships develop. And then, of course, they made friends as well. When we moved away from that area, then we didn't have any kind of co-op for a very long time. So we've kind of dipped in and out of these community type things. One of the things that my family is currently doing is what my teen is using a project-based class. We're actually going to talk a little bit more about that in an upcoming episode. But this was just a mom that contacted me and was like, hey, our kids have kind of connected in, they seem to have some similar interests and things, and I would really like to do some sort of collaborative learning together. And so we've tried to choose some curriculum, some course or something through their high school years that we are like, okay, where's their overlap in their studies? She uses very different curriculum than I do. She uses different resources and methods than I do. And so the kids aren't always like completely aligned and like, oh, we're using the same textbook or we're using the same curriculum or anything. But where we can find overlap, we try to create a situation where the boys can get together and learn each week. And we have found that that has been really good for our sons. We find that they definitely they tend to level up their work a little bit whenever they have an audience to.
Yeah.
Positive peer pressure.
Absolutely. I think positive peer pressure can be used very well. We had a very similar library situation, not exactly the same. One of the local libraries, one year, they called it a homeschool book club. They encouraged the kids to read a book on a certain subject, like dogs or, I don't know, like the Olympics, you know, just like something that was either random or something that was timely. And then they would come each month and share about the book that they read. And so this was just like a group of very random homeschoolers, not people that we knew particularly well, not people we went to church with, but it was, again, an opportunity to read something and stand up and share about it. And those public speaking opportunities, I think, are really valuable for homeschool kids. And then they got to meet some other kids, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I can see that. So our library in the little town we live in now currently has, they call it the homeschool huddle. And it's once a month, but it is for local homeschoolers to come and the librarians do some sort of activity with the kids there's a space over in another part of the library where they encourage the moms to come and visit. So that's really kind of lovely. And at the time, we had been involved in a homeschool community that was in a town a little bit further away. And when they introduced this, I was like, I love this idea that maybe we could connect with more homeschoolers in our actual town so the kids could find some friends that are closer to us than having to drive to the other town. All of the co-ops we have chosen to participate in have really been kind of enrichment co-ops. We don't have homework associated with them. We don't come home with extra assignments to incorporate on top of our curriculum that we are using at home. So it is, they'll take art classes and they'll just work on an art project there in class. Lots of music. There's been choir that they've been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of some of the other classes. Years ago, I taught a science class for the kids. And it just kind of depends on like who wants to teach what. We've done, when we had a roller rink, we would have a monthly meetup at the roller rink. Now there's like bowling and you can go do bowling. And it's just a time set aside at the bowling alley where you get a little bit of a price break and the kids can bowl every week. My kids did that last year and they absolutely loved it.
PE,
yes, exactly. And field trips. That has been one of the biggest blessings from having some sort of community-based group. It doesn't have to be a large group, but so many times you can get discounts for going someplace as a group. And that has made some really cool field trips more affordable for our family, like places that we wouldn't have been able to maybe pay full ticket price for. Going as a group, we were able to get discounted rates to go. And so that was kind of a fun thing. So my kids had some experiences that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So those are some of my favorite reasons and kind of how it works. Currently, the project-based class my son is doing, that does have homework, but it's just a little bit of a different setup. He got to choose his topic and then he has assignments that he has to complete, but that is actually built into part of his high school credits and curriculum that he's using this year.
Yeah, I mean, we've done some of all. I mean, I'm no longer homeschooling. My kids have all graduated from my homeschool, but I'm still teaching a Plutarch class for our current little setup for co-op. And I don't assign any homework. The moms don't need, like, the only time I assign it as homework is if you miss. Like, well, we're going to keep moving forward. Here's the section that they need to read. That's the only time I would assign any homework for pre-tech. But our Shakespeare teacher, he does, and the kids love her and they love Shakespeare, but she does every year a competition where you memorize a passage, a selection, you know, and then the best presenter. And I mean, these kids go all out. Last year, several of the kids translated the passage. My daughter translated it into German and had her German teacher check it and then memorized it and presented it. It was astounding. We have a girl who speaks Chinese. She did it in Chinese. Yeah. So there's a little bit of homework there. And then they do a performance at the end of the year. So they are memorizing. And everybody who comes to class and like 10 to 18, sometimes even like 7s, 8s, 9s, if they can read, everybody gets a part in the play. It might be a bit part, but everybody gets a part. And they put on a performance at our end of the year homeschool showcase. And it's amazing to see how much these kids love Shakespeare.
You know what? And I think they develop that love because they're doing it together, right? That community helps to foster that experience together.
And the enthusiasm of my friend who loves Shakespeare herself, her enthusiasm just kind of bleeds over and the kids all have picked it up.
Exactly. Because that's a common thread, is that a lot of times it's just like looking at a need or an interest that my kids have and then trying to figure out how we can do that in community. And we do so many things here is just our family. And sometimes it's just a fun addition and the kids really look forward to getting together and doing different types of classes with other people. And then we can get the expertise and the benefit of having other people invest in our children and to gain their enthusiasm. I cannot say enough about the choir program that my kids were a part of for years and years. The choir teachers were just phenomenal. And I think my kids got a much richer music experience by being a part of that than they would have if I would have just taught music or included that in our homeschool. And so I think that is one of the reasons to do community-based learning sometimes, is just kind of looking around and seeing how you might come together and collaborate with other homeschoolers. And knowing that it doesn't have to be something that is incredibly formal or that you have to change your curriculum and that you have to be, you know, tied to a specific expense. I think that that can be nice because moms can work together and figure that out. And the give and take of the participation, I can help in this way. So how can you help in this way? I think that is something that really grows organically. And then, as you mentioned this at the beginning, like it kind of ebbs and flows. Like it morphs to meet the needs of your students and the families that are there. Each year you can kind of evaluate what it is that is working or where other needs, or if you have another family that joins you, how, you know, somebody else may contribute or what they might bring to the table, and just coming together as a community to look at what we have to offer one another, because that enthusiasm that comes through from teaching a class that you're really passionate about is something that is exciting to the students, and that bleeds over into their lives. And so if I have a friend who is really excited about, you know, helping the kids do projects and lead them and teaching them executive function skills, that's fantastic. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, I'd love to help your kids do their science experiments. But then another friend that might be really great at art, you can just trade off the responsibilities and it can lighten your load as a homeschool mom. And like I said, one of the biggest benefits for me was always having that camaraderie with the other moms and the opportunity to connect with them. That was a very important.
For a time, especially early on when we were kind of like figuring out about how we were going to do things together, and we were all reading homeschool books together. So like, we had one night a month where the moms went to somebody's house and we had tea and a treat and had a reading group where one year we watched videos and discussed them, which I particularly like because I don't like homework. So that mom camaraderie was, you know, for us, it was at church, it was at co-op, but then it was just the five or six of us together studying and learning together. And that was a huge reason.
Well, I think, like I said, I think that connection for moms was always a really big draw to me. And then it has been really neat to see the friendships that my kids have built, even families. We're still very deeply connected with families who are no longer a part of the co-op. And this year, for the first time in a very long time, we've chosen not to participate in the co-op just this year. We'll probably actually be back at it next year, but it's just kind of nice to take a little bit of a breather and not have a weekly commitment that we had to be somewhere every single week at a specific time. But, you know, I think that it can start as something as simple as a play date, or like, I know during COVID, when my kids were super cooped up, we had not been an active part of a co-op or any kind of community group in a long time. And there was a mom that reached out and was like, does anybody want to just go to the park? Like, we could just maybe meet outside and like just not be so alone. And this was quite a ways into COVID. And so there were a few families that were comfortable enough to go to the park. And then that is actually how some of my kids met their best friends. And had we not agreed to go meet these, and they weren't random strangers. We knew them through kind of like other people, but I didn't know them. It was a way for us to get connected. And it was so good for the kids who had been kind of isolated, especially the younger kids that were isolated for a kind of a lengthy period of time in that year. And so then as we were coming out of that, for them to have something that they could actually get out of the house and meet other people consistently was great for them. But that actually grew into them like, oh, well, you should do choir with us. And then we were becoming more active participants again. So I think it doesn't always have to stay looking the same from year to year. In our family, we were very involved at some points in time where I was teaching classes, and then other points in time where we just weren't involved at all. And then that has kind of morphed again, and where we've eased back into things or maybe just done one or two classes outside of what we do in our home every day. And I think that's one of the lovely things that I was kind of referring to about the freedom of being able to pick and choose what we want to do each year.
Sure. Yeah. I know we did some picking and choosing. We would take a class at the art museum. One year we did that. One year we went to the homeschool ice skate, and that was kind of a disaster. We weren't very good at it. There's a Fellowship of Christian Athletes cross country and track team that my daughter participated in, and she made a lot of amazing friends there, and she got her PE credit. So that's the other thing, is you can always try to like figure out how these things would fit for credits. So Plutarch goes to your civics for my kids. My kids all three got a Shakespeare credit because they read and studied in depth four plays and performed over their high school years. So they get a Shakespeare credit for that, I think. And so how can you kind of incorporate your project-based learning into the high school credit? How can you? Choir is a great example. You can give a half credit for a homeschool choir that meets a couple times a month even. So there's also some benefit to thinking carefully about how those things can help your older students.
Yeah.
And help you fill that out.
Yeah. I have actually found that sometimes my older students need co-op or some sort of group learning situation more than my younger kids do.
Absolutely.
It helps them broaden their reasoning skills and their, like, when they interact with peers, like I said earlier about like the positive peer pressure of seeing somebody else do well or to perform, and they want to, you know, present themselves in a way that is kind of matching that level. They don't want to shirk when they see other people really rising to the occasion. And so I think that can be kind of fun for kids. And then one other thing that one of our groups does, they have had like a project fair at the end of every year, which really it didn't have to be a particular project, but just kind of a showcase of what you were learning. So the kids had a place to kind of present in some way what they had been doing. It wasn't like a formal presentation where they were doing public speaking or anything, but people would just bring in different things that they had been working on throughout the school year, or sometimes people would make like a specific project to display. So that was always fun. And we've always done it in kind of it's usually at one of the church, like fellowship hall, and everybody puts their stuff out on a table. And then it's just kind of a mingling. Parents and grandparents are invited and friends and family. And then everybody brings a little snack. And it's like kind of the end of the year celebration, I guess. That's been kind of a fun thing to do as well.
For 20 years, my church has held homeschool showcase in May at the end of the year. So all of the homeschoolers, there's a lot of poetry recited. There's a lot of instruments played. One year we had somebody doing their Taekwondo forms for us. And there are always tables with displays of handcrafts or science experiments or something like that. And then the Shakespeare play is usually performed after it. My kids, that was one of those public speaking activities that, you know, my kids started off loathing and disdaining and ended up loving kind of that opportunity to show and share,
I could do that.
And we invite the whole congregation, anybody in the church, parents, grandparents are always welcome to come. And it's just really celebratory. It's a lovely evening every year to see what the kids have done. Got a family that has like banjo and guitar, and they always play something fun. It's a fun evening. And I would encourage you, if you don't have an opportunity like that, to like find a group where you can celebrate that end of the year thing.
And it literally can just be like one or two families, even just for starting out. It doesn't have to be something big. A lot of times when we start something like this, it has it kind of grows in its own right. And you can kind of continue to like stop and evaluate like how things are. But I think it's a really beautiful way of coming together in community as homeschoolers and working towards something that serves the individual needs of each family, but at the same time is providing kind of a greater experience for each of those families. So,
Well, what are some ways, like, have you started any group yourself in particular?
I haven't really been one of the people that like kind of kicked off starting a group. We've always moved in. As we've moved into a new location, we'll kind of try to find where the homeschoolers are. And I would say our library here, as I mentioned, the little homeschool huddle that they do, that librarian actually asked for kind of a meeting of the moms. She was like, hey, we really want to know how to serve you best. And so I participated in some of those meetings to kind of flesh out like what it might look like that the library might offer. Mm-hmm. And I have taught classes before in our co-op in the past, but it was another mom that was kind of like, okay, this is what we're going to do this semester. Do you want to come in and help this way? And so I guess more than I have like stepped forward and really started something, I've definitely been in certain times and seasons, I have been one of the people who has kind of maybe been a little bit in the background on the leadership of something like that. But, you know, the current class that we're in, that was literally just one mom that reached out to me and she was like, hey, do you want to do this? And I was like, this is perfect. She was like, I'll be happy to teach the class if you'll give my kids feedback on their projects, because sometimes, and that's another thing that we haven't touched on, it's really important, especially as our kids get into high school, it is really good for them to have feedback from other people and not just mom all the time. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly advantages to having them have somebody else as kind of a teacher or a facilitator in their education. mm-hmm. especially if they go on to further education, that mm-hmm. it can be, you know, good to have somebody other than just mom.
We can have either rose-colored glasses and see no wrong, or we can see everything wrong, right? Like
exactly. Not,
sometimes there's not the middle when it's our own kids, though.
So yeah.
I think having other people know and love our kids enough to kind of do some of that evaluation is really valuable.
Well, I think this has been a lovely conversation, and I really thank you for joining me today to discuss this. And I hope that everybody kind of goes, you know, after you've listened to this, I hope that it gives you something to kind of ponder and chew on. If maybe you haven't been a part of a co-op or some sort of community learning that has been maybe small and organic.
Yeah, I mean, I think moms can be really intimidated by the bigger, very set co-ops. So it's more organic, more kind of just like, yeah, don't be intimidated by what that might look like. But be willing to like think outside, you know, we could do a nature group. We could do an art group. We could do, you know, and let it.
Yeah.
Go
and that's the thing. I think it just like not being intimidated even by the word co-op. And like, that's one that we throw around a lot, but it feels very formal and very official and very,
yeah,
like from my perspective, almost like intrusive, because again, I was talking about that freedom and flexibility that I love. And that is why sometimes those are not a good fit for me. And then it's funny because you approach that from the other angle, which was like, well, I really need to be the one in control. Well, that's the issue. I don't know if I've said that on the podcast before, but I do have a theory. I'm pretty sure it's probably rooted in fact, but homeschool moms all have control issues.
For sure.
We really, there's a reason we homeschool, and it has to do with, you know, so at least for me personally, but I see it reflected in a lot of other homeschool moms. And that's part of it. It's like, well, I really like the aspect of the group learning, but I still really want to maintain a lot of control about what's happening in my homeschool and have the freedom to pick and choose and to make the decisions that feel right for our family.
Right.
And that is why having kind of these organic groups and just friendships and families that choose to come together to do some learning has been such a great opportunity for our family. And it doesn't have to be something that is super formal or rigid, and it doesn't have to be something that's super intimidating. Often
it's expensive.
It doesn't have to be expensive at all. And I think sometimes it really just has to do with, you know what, if you have two homeschool moms that are willing to embrace one another's families and their mess and be able to open your home up and just get something started, it can be fun. And choosing something that you would like to incorporate in your homeschool, but that you have struggled to implement is a great way to start. Find that one thing that you're like, oh, I really want to do this, but I'm just not consistent with it. See if you can find one or two other mamas that would like to do the same thing, and then you can come together. So, all right.
Yep.
It's lovely to chat with you today. Thank you so much for joining me. And
all right.
I will talk to everyone else soon.
That's our show for today. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review so you never miss out on the wonder of homeschooling better together. To stay connected and learn even more about the Homeschooling Better Together resources, and to join our free community, visit hsbtpodcast.com. Until next week, keep stepping out of the overwhelm and into the wonder.